Okay, it gives me great personal pleasure to introduce our next speaker. And it's a huge irony because the issues that I got to know Kalpin Warden over with fiber and peering. And we actually took a turns after five roadshow 3 or 4 years ago now, telling very much the same story as Thomas just told. Carl is one of the industry's nice guys. We know that for a fact because we've got it in print. And as well as the time he put in at CityLink, so he was one of the development engineers on the product that Tom talked about. He's now at the State Services Commission where he's a solutions manager. And he'll tell us as to what that means, and again, where user power is leading in another area. So, Carl, they're all yours. Thanks, Chris. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd just like to start my presentation with a short video clip. So, get into that and then we'll talk a little bit about the topic of the day.
Plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it
It's a little hard to come by, Marty. I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here. I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl. Is she pretty? She's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Yes. But what you wrote here, Doc, that says it all. Doc, my only hope. Marty, I'm sorry. I'm the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity as a bolt of lightning. What did you say? A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever gonna strike.
Yeah.
made some reference to the New Zealand Institute report that came out at the end of last year. In that report, they suggested that high-speed internet would potentially enable between 2.7 and $4.4 billion additional revenue to New Zealand per year just through productivity improvements and increases in our current industry. They've considered that there was potentially an upside of maybe up to $5 billion a year through increased innovation and trade in weightless goods. And then you saw Ralph's little picture up there. We certainly need to be in that weightless economy. But then what is the bolt of lightning that's going to power us to that future? And I personally don't think there is one bolt of lightning. It's more like we need some fork lightning. And this morning I'd like to maybe talk about, this afternoon, one particular fork in that lightning the government is engaging in, and that's around demand aggregation. And demand aggregation is often called a demand-side initiative. Is something the government is undertaking with the view to improving first broadband for its own use, but also with the view of hopefully encouraging new investment in broadband infrastructure by having government as an anchor tenant. Or an anchor customer of high-speed broadband services so that we can improve the level of broadband to the wider community. So demand aggregation is about the state sector working together better and smarter. And hence the topic today, United We Prosper, Divided We Pay. So first I'd like to just get a clear definition of demand aggregation, and you've got the definition here on the screen. So it's really about pulling our demand so that will hopefully lead to significantly better outcomes than it could be achieved by each individual government entity going to market and buying services on their own. And in fact, we've been focusing in four key areas in government. The first is with the government shared network. Now, before I joined the State Services Commission at the beginning of 2007, and it still amazes me that I'm actually working in government. I never thought that would happen. But before I started there, I didn't know much about what the State Services Commission was all about. And more specifically about the development goals that they have for the state sector. And overall, they're really wanting New Zealand to have a system of world-class government. And there are a number of goals underpinning that big goal. And four of those are these. It's to be the have the state sector as a networked place, an accessible place, and a trusted place for people to receive services from coordinated state agencies. And these goals are actually being significantly contributed to by this particular initiative, the Government Shared Network. And the Shared Network is all about aggregating demand across the public service and Crown entities so that we can deliver much higher speed, much better security, and much better interconnectivity so that government can work together better. The second big initiative that's going on in government is the Karen Network, which is focused at the research and higher education sector. The Karen Network has a 10 gigabit backbone around New Zealand, and institutes are connecting up to that with 1 gigabit connections. And it's fueling, and then that network is being connected at very high speed to similar research and education networks around the globe. And all of a sudden, New Zealand is in that global world of research and pulling gene data from other places, and it's a really exciting place to be. And that's being achieved by that sector aggregating their demand and requirements for very high-speed broadband. The next sector is the National Education Network. The education sector, this sector is really focusing on schools, politics, wānanga, and libraries. And what they're wanting to do is with better interconnectivity in their sector, support much better education outcomes for our children and for our future. And then the final sector, and by no means the last sector, is the health sector. And Connected Health has got a big job ahead of it as it's seeking to get much better interconnectivity across quite a vast sector. Across the sector, there's somewhere around about 13,000 health provider locations. And by better connecting that sector up, they're wanting to deliver far better clinical outcomes, and we're going to need to do things in a much smarter way as our population ages. So over the last 10 months, it's been pretty quick work, over the last 10 months, This set has been working closely together to work out how we can aggregate our demand and how government, as a customer of broadband services, can get better outcomes for itself and for the community. And our first step was to develop the common framework for state sector broadband aggregation. And this framework sets out a set of principles which government is going to use to purchase its broadband services going forward. And really with two key objectives. The first objective is that we want to get considerably better alignment across the state sector. And then the second is to stimulate our new investment by being a large customer around the country. Now, this common framework was announced at the Digital Summit in November last year. Prior to that, it was approved by Cabinet, and it encompasses 13 key principles, which I'd like just to take a few moments to discuss and unpack. When the framework was released, it was released at the same time as the National Broadband Map. And the broadband map looks good, and so it got all the press, and the framework just sort of slid in under the radar. But this first principle is really saying that government is going to be very serious about doing this. The minister mentioned that earlier today. And we are going to aggregate our demand across the state sector. And we have already got a lot of work underway to achieve that. And there is a lot of focus now going into putting these principles into practice across the state sector. This principle, overarching principle, is really has the intent for us to move away from the traditional behaviour of government departments. In the past, particularly large departments have gone out and just contracted for services nationally. However, the market, as we've been hearing today, has shifted a lot. There are many different alternatives already out there today and many on the horizon for much higher speed, much more economic services in regions. And then also with the increase in the change in the whole wholesale market, there's a real opportunity to mix and match services to deliver a much better end-to-end experience. But if we're going to do that as government, we need to have a shift in our thinking and in the way we purchase. So what we're trying to depict here with this picture is to say that through the common framework, we're looking to align those four large government sectors in such a way that we think about what is trying to be achieved on a regional level, not only just think nationally. So we want to be able to support regional broadband initiatives as a major purchaser of broadband services. The next part, next overarching principle is that we want to have transparency of our demand information. And so we've created an online map which maps those four sectors that I talked about. So, for instance, this is New Plymouth. This is all of the government locations in New Plymouth. And then this is the amount of high-speed broadband and fibre available. So only a little bit in the heart of New Plymouth and a little bit looks like out Bell Blockway. So with this, we're really trying to put out there, these are the end customers of who are government-related entities that we want to serve through demand aggregation. We've also included some tools to help, particularly with local government, to even bring in private sector demand so they can understand what other business and even residential demand there is out there for broadband services. So there's an online survey part of that that could be used by particularly local government as a means of surveying their region. Over the next little while, we're going to be improving that map, and within about 2 months we'll have a new release. We're looking to be able to have much greater granularity of data. We're looking to collect a lot more network information to put on that map. And we're looking to also include an API so that people can pull particularly this demand side information and mash it up for their own purposes. So we're continuing to be transparent with our view of demand. Then this principle here, the fourth principle, is really about wanting to maximize the competition at the service layer and maximize service offerings available. We're not looking to be a purchaser that will continue to perpetuate monopolistic situations by continuing to buy vertically integrated services. We want to move away from buying vertically integrated services to purchasing services horizontally so that we can mix and match and optimize the experience for government users. I think it's probably a really good time for us to get into demand aggregation because of the changes that are going on in the marketplace. And these principles here are not there to inhibit the incumbent operator, but more it's a real opportunity for all of the market to demonstrate this new willingness to work in a much more cooperative way. And government wants to be a purchaser that supports that new behavior. Obviously, there are going to be situations where there is only one operator in a space, and it's pretty uneconomic to have a second one. Well, in those situations, government alone, as a user of services, can't solve that problem on its own. But at least through demand aggregation, we've got a voice, and we can add that to a much more regional partnership view of the problem that we're looking to solve and be a contributor to the solution. Now, these next two principles are really complementary. They're about encouraging investment in open access, and probably on the more negative side, about discouraging ongoing purchasing of vertically integrated services. What we mean by wanting to stimulate new investment is that we want to have a very competitive service environment, but we want to buy services as much as possible that are based on open access infrastructure, so that we can optimize, as a country, efficient investment at those very physical layers of the network. So we do want to encourage vigorous competition, but we want to have that leveraged off optimally delivered infrastructure as much as possible. And that's important for New Zealand because we are a small country, we're a long way away from the rest of the world. If we end up with overbuilds of infrastructure, it's going to be us as end users that end up paying for that. And we're not going to be in a position to be globally competitive if we can't afford to pay the basic bill for the services that we're receiving. These next group of principles are really about better aligning state sector contracts and for demand aggregation to work really well, we need to have a known amount of demand and be able to bring that to market in a known time period. And in order to do that, then we're in a position to support local business cases to roll out better broadband infrastructure. And now you could argue in some ways that maybe our existing demand aggregation strategies with networks such as the government shared network have already sort of solved some of those contractual things by lowering the price to the end user. The actual fact that the GSN started to roll out services to government customers has made a big shift in the market. All of a sudden the telcos seeing the reality of that situation have gone around to see a lot of their government customers and said, well, you're a great government customer, we want to treat government as one, so if you lock in some big chunks of your business with us for a long period of time, then we'll give you a discount based on the fact that you're big government purchaser. And while that's good in the short term for the individual agency, it's not allowing us to actually lift the bar on the amount of broadband capabilities that is there so that we can innovate and deliver much better and much more productive services to you or to New Zealand as end users of government services. We're not going to transform government that way. These next set of principles are really about creating a much more interconnected environment, and it really probably goes a little bit to the heart of what Tom just talked about. If we look, for example, at the education sector, there are a number of networks that are interconnecting schools around New Zealand. There's also been, in recent times, the rise of fibre-based networks such as the Loop in Nelson, and also more recently on the North Shore, there's the North Shore Education and Access Loop. And a key tenet going forward is that we need to have these schools well interconnected with one another, and also well interconnected into education applications that they can all share. And we're often getting the situation where this is not working so well. For example, one service that Ministry of Education offer to schools is video conferencing. And they have a video conference bridge. Now, video conferencing works really well between schools as long as both schools at each end of the conference are on the same network. As soon as It starts from one network and goes to another network. It is a lot harder to get that working well, and it seems surprising why that should be the case. The other situation that we're seeing is that often two schools, and it's the same problem that Tom is having, two schools, maybe in the South Island, maybe using, most definitely using different operators, if they conference or do something with one another, it is very likely that they're going to interconnect with one another, most likely via Auckland. So this is not the optimum situation. We're not delivering the best services to the end user doing these sorts of things. So what we're looking to do with these principles is to encourage better interconnection of networks so that the service is better, so that it's supporting what's going on in a region, and one way in which we can do that is introduce things like neutral points of presence, so places where we try and level the playing field by saying we would like to have all of our services delivered at this point and interconnected at this point, so forcing some things that we'd really like to see maybe the industry deliver on their own. And I think there's some encouraging things happening around that with the undertakings. Now these last couple of principles are really about having a greater aspiration for the level of broadband we need into these institutes. And probably the best way to maybe talk about that a little bit more is to explain maybe a personal experience of my own. And I have to say I've lived a blessed broadband life. It's just over 10 years ago today, I was one of the very first, it was between me and Tony Whitehouse from NEC. I think I beat him. I think I might have been the very first ADSL user in New Zealand. And at the time, it was pretty exciting to have ADSL in my home. And one particularly good thing about it was just the whole change of being always online makes to the way you use the internet in your home. And even my skeptical, penny-pinching accountant wife was pretty, don't tell her I said that. I've got a business case in at the moment and I might not get through. But even she agreed that the functionality that we got through that was quite a leap forward to what we were used to. Back at that time, Telecom was providing some first media live video and near video on demand services over that connection. And some of those near video demand things were pretty cool, and now we're actually really delivering those over the internet through people like TVNZ. But my blessed life even went on, because in 2005 we moved into the Wellington CBD, and I was working for CityLink, and they blessed me with a 1 gigabit Ethernet over fiber connection to my home. And I have to say that really did start to change the way we lived our online life. In fact, it changed a lot of things that we did. We got rid of our television, our VCR, our stereo system. We got rid of our landline, and we started to do what we did. In fact, do everything we can over an IP connection. And that's really enabled quite well, because we've got pretty well unlimited bandwidth to our home. And it has literally changed the way we do things. And then, unfortunately, at the end, or near the end of 2006, in August, my wife's father fell ill, and we took the opportunity to move up and be nearer to him for 5 months, and we moved to the Auckland CBD, and we had to get a DSL connection up there, and it was like we'd had our life support chopped off. And all of a sudden, all the things that we were used to doing to, all became a whole lot slower, or a lot of them didn't even work at all. And I guess the point that I really started to reflect on about that was that often you don't realize the changes you've gone through until something you've got is taken away from you. Or another way of saying it maybe is sometimes we don't know what we don't know. And I guess the question this raises in my mind is that if gigabit per second can make a significant difference to an individual, what can it do to a business? What can it do to a government agency? What can it do in a school? What can it do in our health system? And then what opportunities in all of those sectors are we missing out on because we haven't got the type of interconnectivity that we really need to drive the innovation and the changes that we need in those areas? I think a big change that we see going on at the moment is the move to the cloud. And I don't know how many of you have started using cloud-based services. I've been using Donald and I have done some presentations together. We've prepared in different towns. We've been in different places and worked on a Google presentation together. I did all of my notes for this on Google Docs. I've been using Google Docs in anger, actually, and it's working really well. And so there's a real big shift going on to the cloud, and there are some great New Zealand examples of cloud-based services, things like Sonar 6, Xero, Plan HQ, and just in the paper this week, a friend of mine launched, with a couple of business partners, launched a service called ShareSite, which does portfolio management online. And these things are going to have and are having a big impact. And as cloud computing increases and supported by greater and greater bandwidth, we are going to see some significant changes. And there is potential for significant change in the education sector and in the health sector through these types of technologies. And in fact, I think personally that the opportunities here are almost endless. And I think one of the big opportunities is for New Zealand coming up with good solutions for these sectors that we can trade internationally through weightless, through that weightless economy. So, I guess my question is, as a country, are we going to continue to be followers in this space, or are we going to strive to be leaders in this space? And the fundamental reason we're pursuing demand aggregation in government as a large customer of these services is to develop unconstrained capability so that those sectors can deliver huge or are enabled to have huge gains through changes in the way they do things. So we could have world-leading health, world-leading education, world-leading research, and world-leading government services enabled by world-leading broadband infrastructure. So that's all I have to say, pretty much. It's nice. We need the sky bottled and distributed with this message all over the country. But he posed a question to us. Has anyone got any questions I want to pose to him? Weightless economy, would you be prepared to spell the word weight? Or has it got two separate spellings? confess that I am a bit tighter, but I tell you, because I've got a high-speed symmetric connection, I do contribute significantly on the upstream side of that. But that said, it's really encouraging that TVNZ are doing the things that they're doing, because, literally, that's how I watch my news. That's how I can catch up on things. I'm really looking forward to, I don't want a bit time. It's just that I don't have a legal alternative at the moment. Without having to go back to broadcast television. And so it's really cool that you're doing that. I actually watched nearly all of the Olympic Games, all of the Olympic Games coverage. We watched a 2 megabit stream from TVNZ because my connection's connected to Wix. I moved 60 gigabits of traffic in about 2 weeks. And imagine what that would cost you on your DSL. Annie's got a question out the back. Carl, congratulations on a lot of some really good work there. It's really good to hear. I've one small niggling concern about demand aggregation. Where the government is a really big buyer in a sector, if it aggregates demand, is there a risk that it'll leave the market in a situation where the business case for the rest of the market is no longer there and therefore be detrimental to competition? And are you safeguarding against that in any way? I see what you're saying there. We could be deform the market by doing that, and certainly that's not our intent to do that. And so we're a large, for instance, the GSM is a large wholesale customer. Matt mentioned that today. So, no, we're not looking to distort the market in any way at all, but we're wanting to work as cooperatively with the market as possible so that we can encourage new infrastructure where it's needed and use existing infrastructure where it exists. So, okay, time for one last question for Carl. Okay, just one quick announcement. There's still time to fill in your CityLink crossword to go into one of our phone, which is a device that's got a few plugs today.